fear and the brain. Here's an example. You're doing your monthly bills. You pick one up, the one from the cell phone company. You open the invoice and freeze. Your spouse looks over at you, and just by looking at your expression, she can tell in a split second what you're seeing is not good news. Just what is it about your face that gives you away? How does your partner's brain interpret that look on your face as one of surprise, shock, even fear? Well, scientists working on a little part of the brain called the amygdala think they might have an answer. Joining me to talk about it is my guest, Paul Whalen, who is a neuroscientist at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He joins us by phone today. Thanks for talking with us, Dr. Whalen.
You're very welcome, Ira.
Ever had that experience?
The phone bill one?
Yes.
Only when I made too many calls.
Let's say someone, I saw the commercial, the guy's holding it, you know, in surgery, he's being locked onto it. So someone is afraid. You see that person, and your brain can interpret that expression as fear. What is going on inside of your brain?
Well, I think what we like to talk about is that there's a number of parallel conversations going on in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That you kind of, there's a number of things you want to be thinking about and could be responding to, and it seems that what you do is you kind of split them up and attack them one by one. So we have centered on an area called the amygdala, which when you get an expression like that, it seems to be particularly responsive to the eye region, and it's not even just the eye region, but it appears to us to be specifically the eye whites, that is the scleras of your eyes.
Waiting to see the whites of the eyes. So you actually set up an experiment to watch which part of the face is doing.
Yeah, what we do is we put people in an fMRI scanner or a functional MRI scanner, and those are the ones that not only do we get to see the brain, but we can see the brain behaving. And so that allows us to show people pictures, and we can study areas of the brain like this. What happens in our studies is you'll lie there and just see a number of faces coming by very quickly. And when you walk out of the scanner, what you'll tell us is that, indeed, we showed you a bunch of faces. There were a lot of different people, and they actually didn't seem to be showing much expression at all. In fact, what was happening is that right before each face, for a split second, we were actually showing you the eye whites of either an afraid face or a happy face. And what the amygdala tells us in the scanning afterwards is even though you have no idea they were there, it was well aware that they were fearful eye whites in the environment.
So it's not the color of the eyes, it's not the how, you know, the slits, it's actually the whites themselves. What are the whites doing that your amygdala is picking up?
Well, they're increasing in size, so your lids are opening wider. That seems to us, that would seem to a viewer to suggest that you've become more vigilant. You've detected something in the environment, and I don't know what it is yet, and I'd probably do pretty well to figure out what's got you going. And the signal, at least one basic signal, appears to be the size of the eye whites. Now, It's also true, exactly what you said. Right now, if you look at anyone who has a normal eye pose, you can't see the whole iris there, that the round ball in the middle,
right,
which would be the pupil and the colored part. The top part of it's cut off, but interestingly, when you widen your eyes in a surprised or fearful expression, what you do is you reveal the entire circle of the iris. And so while we're saying it's the larger size of the white field, the eye white, it could well be the fact that you've just revealed the entire iris to me, and that usually doesn't happen.
1-800-989-8255, our number, talking with Paul Whalen. I imagine then this is something that is left over from our evolutionary heritage?
Yeah, it's fun to think of it that way, and especially since we do this where people don't know we're presenting them. So some people would call these subliminal presentations of the eye whites, and I think that's an okay word to use. People have no idea they're there, and so that really does lead a number of people to suggest, oh, wow, then it must be innate. You must have been born with this on day one.
Right.
And that's possible.
Yeah.
But also, you know, your brain automates things that you do over and over again, or it automates things that are very important very quickly. So we could have learned this as well. The experiment we would need to do to prove that would be to take a child right from the womb, cover her eyes, run her to the scanner, and start showing her faces. Nobody has volunteered for that experiment yet, and my wife is not going to allow me into the delivery room the next time we have a child.
Well,
for that very reason.
Yeah, yeah, and my brain is not automating as well as it used to these days. Now, what is this amygdala? Why you say that it only lights up and it's very distinct? When it's a sense of fear?
Well, it's all we know so far is it's sensing that the eyes are wider, yeah. And eyes grow wider for a number of reasons. It's interesting to think about a fearful expression on another person. It tells you that maybe something bad's happening, but it really doesn't tell you anything about what's going on. And that's where, you know, I'm sure the rest of the brain does something. When amygdala tells it, I've got eye whites, now you can use that wonderful machinery you have elsewhere to work on other problems, look around the room and see what might be driving this. So it really is, amygdala is particularly responsive when you have an uncertain threat.
Right.
And eye whites are a good signal for that.
You know, there was a story last week or so about the brain in telling a lie, how the brain lights up in different places.
Yeah, well, that could also be fear, couldn't it? Fear that you're about to be caught.
Right. And it actually, yeah, it keeps very quiet when you're telling the truth, when you're telling a lie. The same functional MRI was lighting up in different parts of the brain. And in fact, saying, well, should I tell the lie? And if I should tell the lie, I have to instruct my mouth to do something, you know?
That's right. Well, it's all about figuring out how you're going to handle the current situation and what you're going to do.
What other parts of is the amygdala involved in emotion or just in the detection part?
Well, that's one of the questions. We historically have always talked about it as the fear center of your brain and an emotional area of your brain. But you got to think about what the purpose of an emotion is. It's to get you to go back on the event, think it over, think about the things that preceded it, because if you can learn about that, then maybe you can avoid that event in the future. So really, most people would tell you that the amygdala is an emotional area that learns, but we like to say it's a learning area first that has a special relationship with emotion.
Now, speaking of that, is there anything to be learned about people who might have anxiety disorders here?
Well, I think the interesting thing to think about is that this is a really basic response. You want areas of your brain to be inflexible. That is, you want them to be Chicken Little and cry wolf every time they see anything that might even smack of danger. And then what you want are other areas of the brain that have a little more information at their disposal, and then they can regulate. When we start thinking about what's going to happen when we study people with anxiety disorders, what I would expect is that since this is such a basic response, it actually wouldn't be different between somebody who's over-anxious and someone who is. But what would be different is once amygdala fires and says, I've got a potential threat, now the ability of the rest of the brain to deal with that and regulate and come up with a plan, that's what's going to be different in an anxiety disorder. So another way to say that is anxiety disorders are not best thought of as hyper-fear. They're hyper-vigilance. It's people who continue to try to create scenarios and possibilities and what if questions.
Right.
And that's going to take up a lot of energy and a lot of time. And you don't necessarily have to go down that long route, all the time.
How does the path then go if your amygdala, says, hey, I should be fearful of something? How does the decision go to a part of the brain that says, let's get the heck out of here?
Well, amygdala has an amazing anatomy, has an amazing, output anatomy where it's one of the older areas of your brain. It's located in the center. You actually have two of them, one on each side of your brain. And they have projections to all the motor centers, right down your spinal cord. It's the area that primes areas that allow you to be reflexive and also to allow you to respond, in an outward manner towards, other people. So whether you're going to run or fight, this area is going to prime those areas and get you ready to do that. So that's probably the best way to think about the eye white response. We don't know what you need to do yet,
right.
So we're just going to prime everything, so you'll be ready for anything.
So this could get the adrenaline going and things like that.
It certainly, amygdala has connections with all the areas that drive those sort of bodily responses, certainly.
Now, can you actually fool it in your experiments?
How would I fool yours, Ira?
can I just voluntarily open my eyelids, for example, and make you think that I'm, fear. I'm causing fear.
Well, I mean, what this study tells you is amygdala. It's a very interesting question. Does amygdala know it's dealing with fearful eyes, or is it really just a more simple rule of size? And I would say it's probably the latter. So it's not so much that you're fooling it. It's that crying wolf from this area is a good. You're always going to be in a better position, even if you've had a false alarm. At least you didn't get caught by surprise.
Is that why you hear stories where animals you say, well, don't stare at an animal, don't look them in the eye. This might have something to do with that.
Well, I don't know. I haven't thought about that, Ira. Certainly, it appears that our brains are built to be particularly responsive to this region, and if you're trying to keep would-be attacking animal calm, yeah, I guess maybe one thing you shouldn't do is open up your eyes nice and wide and get a lot of sclera going there.
But you always hear people saying, look me right in the eye and say that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Would that have anything to do with the whites, do you think? Or is that another experiment that might be?
Exactly. I would just think of it this way. What this study tells you is obviously this is a really important part of the larger configuration that is a face, and we get a lot of information about eyes, and it drives a lot of our thinking and a lot of our behavior.
How is the hippocampus connected here?
Well, amygdala might be have learned about these simple rules, and hippocampus would be an area that has an even more extensive anatomy in terms of laying down what you've learned for future use. So amygdala would activate hippocampus, and it would be those two working together that might allow you to, it's why often people tell you that they have great memories for very emotional moments in their lives. These two areas working together are the part of the system that lays those memories down so that they're very vivid for years to come.
Mm-hmm. So where do you take your research from here?
I think for us, we'd like to play some more with some of the parts of the faces, and we like the idea that we do these studies and subliminally, or it's a technique called backward masking. Mm-hmm. And I really like the idea that I can dissociate what you're telling me when you come out of a scanner and what I've shown you, because human beings, as subjects in experiments, you know, they're all very wonderful and very individual, but they do things like try to figure out your experiment, and those thoughts that go on during an experiment, as far as we're concerned, that's just going to add noise to the data. So it's really nice when you can run experiments where people have no idea what you're trying to do and get at some of these really, really basic processes that are going on underneath.
Because there are so many other facial expressions.
That's right. One of our favorite things is to play fearful faces off of the other expressions and see how amygdala handles them. So we had a sense that the eye white study was going to work because surprise faces really, really get this system going as well. And if you think about surprise faces and fear faces, that's what they have in common. It's a wide-eyed expression that tells you something's going on in the environment. You do well to figure it out. Interestingly, we also assumed we would get great responsivity to angry faces because that's an actual direct threat. But amygdala is kind of interested in them, but not as interested as it is in fear. And I think that goes back to the what we talked about earlier. A certain threat is a certain threat. That there's a guy standing in front of you or a woman standing in front of you, and he or she is angry. And now it's response time. So you're kind of past this learning area. There's not much more to learn here. You have to make a decision. But in the case of fear, you've really got something to learn. You don't know whether to go left or right yet. You better learn a little bit more before you respond.
Mm-hmm. And you've got, you know, frowns and eyebrow movements and other parts of the face, and they don't affect the amygdala.
Well, no. All we know so far is that the eyes have a great effect, and then I think what you do from there is you start adding things in one by one and get a sense of how complicated the conversation can get.
So can you add a library of these other things and see what other parts of the brain might affect, you know, be affected by these other facial expressions?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, simple studies like this are nice because there's a lot of directions you can go in once you've got a finding like this.
Is it hard to recruit people to study them?
No, because you hang up a sign that that they're going to get paid, but they're also going to get a picture of their brain for their refrigerator, and I'll tell you, that's what they really come for.
It must be these college students, right?
That's right. We get a lot of college students.
I think that we know more about the brains of college students than anybody else in the world, I think.
That's probably actually a very important point, that a lot of this research is really done on people aged 18 to 32. We know a lot about this group.
Well,
I think we need to move it around developmentally.
You should throw some senior citizens. They may not be afraid anymore by seeing the whites of people's eyes.
That's right. Just like Jerry Seinfeld talks about people in Florida backing out of their driveways without looking. They've been through enough. They've seen enough, and that's it. They don't really care anymore.
Absolutely. I think that's, you should throw that in. That's my suggestion for the next run.
Excellent.
Thank you very much. Yep. Good luck to you. Paul Whelan is a neuroscientist at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where they have a lot of students to experiment on. Thanks, and have a good holiday.
You too.
We're going to take a break and come back and talk about a very historic anniversary, Christmas Day, a few days before, 1954. What happened that day, or around Christmas then? See if you know. We'll be back to talk about it. Stay with us.